Hi.
And welcome to another episode of From the Lower Level. I'm your host, Moshi.
And I'm your host, Patrizio.
And this week, what were you going to say? Sorry.
Wow. I was just going to say, welcome to part one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion bonus episode.
Okay. I was going to do the intro, but I guess you could do it fine.
Hard work being a podcaster.
It is. So, welcome to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion month. One of four episodes that we'll be discussing exclusively on what is meant to be a historic reunion. I don't know. Legit, do you think there is enough content for it to be four parts? Or are they just, like, trying to ham it up and, you know, milk the most of the situation?
So when I was thinking about it, Erica has not done any, like, PR for this entire season, right? Like, she hasn't been on Watch What Happens Live. She hasn't been... She hasn't done the after show as well.
Yep.
Rinna and Erica are both missing from the after show. So, like, we actually haven't heard from Erica at all. So, I feel like you could, like, if the reunion was only going to be three parts, like, the fourth part is literally just, like, you know, an episode's worth of content of just Erica talking about the things that she should have been talking over the last 20 weeks about.
Okay, good call. I didn't think of it that way. So, I guess then we're in for a doozy. But this one, the first part, starts off 2 weeks before. We are invited to a little kiki between friends, Rinna and EJ. What do you think of that little setup that they showed?
I don't know. I don't think I like it.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
Yeah, like Rinna has clearly, I don't know, called the producers and being like, I'm going to go to Erica's house and you need to film this.
But what were they filming? Like, their conversation felt really produced and fake, right?
Well, I think it's a conversation that, like, would have made more sense, like, perhaps not at the start of the reunion. Like, it would have made more sense, like, several weeks ago when people were like, oh, is Erica even going to go to the reunion, right? Like, at this point, we know she's going. So what is the purpose of having this conversation?
Or it might have been a nice addendum to the last episode of the season where they do, like, a flash forward and we're like, okay, so she's no longer friends with anybody but Rinna.
In a very similar way to, like, I feel like last season, the addendum was Rinna going to see Denise.
Yes.
Like, yeah, yes. It would have made a lot more sense in that context.
Totally. All right, so we have the 2 weeks of nothing that happens before the reunion, and then we are quickly taken to the reunion. First things first, the set.
I mean, it's Kathy Hilton's home.
Allegedly. Inspired by Kathy Hilton, though. What did you think? I mean, we need to talk, I guess, about the impact that Kathy Hilton, a friend of, has had on this season, because that's kind of, I guess, the other big thing aside from the Erica Jane of it all. But to have an impact so huge that the set is designed around her house?
Huge. Like, I mean, Eden Sassoon could never, Dana... could never. No. But bring Dana back.
Well, maybe. But do we also think that with the addition of Kathy Hilton, Bravo have kind of, because, like, let's be honest, Beverly Hills, it was not interesting anymore. Again, it's, you know, 11 seasons in, it was getting a bit stale, and Kathy Hilton has kind of given it a bit of cultural cachet again and a bit of relevance. So do we think that they're also perhaps, you know, just jumping on the bandwagon of it all, the Kathy Hilton of it all?
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. Like, what do they... I mean, I feel like reunion sets are usually, like, based off, like, one of the cast trips.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know. It's, like, an interesting choice to have chosen Kathy's house. I feel like, obviously, you know, they could have done, like, a Tahoe set, or they could have done a Del Mar set, or Or like inspired from Chinese New Year. Like there's so many other choices. Like I feel like Kathy's house, we only got to see it like twice as well. And we didn't even see her house. We kind of just like saw either the tennis court or like inside her house as well. Like we never saw that outdoor area that they're even referencing.
We got glimpses of it. But I think again, that speaks to how much they're jumping on the Kathy Hilton train as like this form of relevancy of making the show more interesting, and also like calling out, I guess, as a mark of respect to Kathy Hilton, like, this is how important you were to our show. We want to make sure that you definitely come back. And you know what I would love to see? I would love to see a situation where Kathy Hilton pushes Kyle out of the franchise.
It's never going to happen, Monty.
And brings Kim in. Like, no, but like, you know, we're in a state of transcendence at the moment. I think if I could put some things out into the universe, I should, because no, you just never know. But wouldn't that be funny?
You know what? I would support you, except for the fact that, like, Kim Richards does not need to be on TV. Own health.
But I wonder what she would be like on the show with somebody like Kathy as opposed to somebody like Kyle, who, let's be honest, I don't think Kyle wanted to see her win.
Well, I don't know, but then I feel like maybe she did because, like, as you keep saying, Kyle has nothing except for, like, the people around her.
Oh, she did in the end because she realised that was the only way people would like her.
I don't know.
All right. Well, then let's, you know, speaking of Kyle Richards, she is the OG of Beverly Hills. This is her 11th reunion. And as such, this has grinded my gears. She got the coveted seat still next to Andy. So we've spoke a bit about the seating arrangements, but now watching it and watching it throughout the episode, did it make a bit more sense to you? Did it feel a bit more right?
I mean, I don't know. Kyle was always going to have that seat. I think, obviously, Garcelle is going to have more drama, perhaps. I don't know. Sudden at the end, it seems like unwarranted, but perhaps there's not much going on with Sudden. I don't know. Marshy, I was more concerned about, like, even without COVID, how uncomfortably close they were all seated.
Thank you. I was just about to say, for me, I think also during like the last couple of reunions that have actually been live, like thinking back, say, to Salt Lake City, and even to the last time we saw a reunion from the Women of New York, I was really enjoying seeing everybody, and I'm Potomac, seeing everybody on individual chairs because they actually looked comfortable. Because we know that they film these reunions for like 12 hours. And seeing someone like Crystal sitting not only at the end of a sofa, but like on the edge so that she can be in shot is uncomfortable to me. Give each of these women their own little throne, I say.
Totally. Like, you can't sit four women on a three-seater couch. You need like to give them all. And like, they don't have to be like completely spaced apart. I don't think they have to be like giant armchairs either. I think if you need to, you can do some like leveled seating as well. Have a back row, have a front row. But like, yeah, it's just, you know, but the other part of me is also like, is it just because we are, you know, like with COVID, like you stay in your house so long and then when you go out, you're like, wow, this is like a crowd of people. But in fact, it's fewer people in that location than it was pre-pandemic, right? I feel like it's the same thing with this reunion set. It's like, oh my God, those women are sitting very close to each other. But this is actually just what it was like pre-pandemic.
Oh, I 100%, it is exactly what it was like pre-pandemic. But to me, I think it's just because I've seen the individual seats now and the women just look more comfortable because it's bullshit. Andy gets to sit back on the chair, really comfortable, his legs are crossed, his loving life. And the women who did the work are like, you know, teetering off the edge of the sofa. Like, it's bullshit.
It's just one of those things, like, you know, we all thought we'd learn and we'd change our behaviours during this pandemic. But what happens? We just revert back to what we were doing before.
True.
Well, Moshi, what do you want to move on to now?
Let's get to the crux of it. Let's talk about the reunion. Let's talk about how it actually kicked off. You know,
actually, can I just make one last comment? Just while we're talking about the theme, the seating, can we talk about the gowns?
The gowns, gorgeous gowns. I hated everybody's outfit.
Well, unfortunately, Dorito is the best dressed. But did you catch Garcelle on Watch What Happens Live? And she said, apparently, the pearls were falling off everywhere.
Well, of course they were. Because it was probably poorly constructed and made at the absolute last minute. That's the risk. Can I just say, that's the risk anytime you wear anything that's like sequins or beads or anything. Like, you're not supposed to like sit on those things. So, of course, they will break and they will fall. But, you know, you got to represent the brand.
Well, I mean, there have been some Yelp reviews floating around about Dorito's business partner. Do you think that this is perhaps an indication of the quality of the gowns?
No comment.
The beads are falling off.
No comment. Look, I mean, I said what I said about beads and sequins. I actually don't think that that has anything to do with like who, like, well, obviously it does with who constructs the gowns, but it is actually also just one of the things you have to consider when you are wearing something that's got like loose added accoutrements.
What's the theme of the like the dressing as well?
I was trying to figure out. I was saying, is it 80s? Is that what they were going for? Like, because I sort of look at all the outfits, like Rinna's total purple head to toe with a bit of the shoulder pad thing, Erica's like baby doll situation, Garcelle, I'm not a fan of that outfit. Garcelle's sort of, again, glittery situation. And Kyle wearing like such a short skirt with that hair that is like very, as my sister said, it's very 1997. Like, she was very specific about that hair. Yeah, it was giving me 80s.
Interesting. Yeah, it just gave me like, we're all going to a different party.
100%. We are all going to a different prom.
Completely different proms.
Completely different proms. But again, I said what I said. I think everybody's outfit was shit.
yeah, there was definitely no standouts this season. And the fact that Dorito wins Best Dressed for me is just says a lot, really.
I think it has a lot more to do. Dorito, now I'm calling her Dorito. Like, I literally thought that was her name. Dorit is also, like, just an extremely beautiful woman. Like, her makeup, everything, it's just so impeccable that, you know, dare I say she could wear a sack, a Hessian sack that is, like, fitted to her body, and she would be serving. And I, you know, it is what it is. I think I went down a rabbit hole of her TikToks and reels because, you know, every day she does like 7 fashion reels on Instagram. And the woman looks fabulous. Whoever her surgeon is, whatever she's doing to keep this look up, she needs to keep doing it. She looks great.
Actually, I will say as well, Crystal actually looked quite beautiful, but I guess understated. Like, the fact that we haven't
understated her,
like, but she does get a mention in the intros. There's the discussion on the leather pants. you know, there was a suggestion that perhaps the leather pants belong in the clubhouse.
I think they do.
You think so?
Because, not because of Crystal, but because of Sutton.
I don't know. Like, I don't think they're iconic enough.
It's an iconic breakdown. Like, Sutton was literally having a breakdown and her only insult was, I'm not jealous of your ugly leather pants. It is brilliant.
I feel like Sutton's, like, roller is, like, more... Oh, like, I would prefer definitely to take that over the leather pants.
No, but so if I was walking through a museum or a gallery... I would expect to see a glass cabinet with the pants and the roller, like, they're on like clear perspex. And so it looks like they're suspended in the air, just floating in this glass cabinet. And seeing the combination together, I would just know the story. You know what I mean? It would just flood. The way art is supposed to fill you with emotions, evoke memories, it's supposed to transcend you. one cannot exist without the other. And putting them, I think, together, even just the color pairing, that clash of that sparkly sort of purple roller with those brown leather pants, evocative. Okay, I can see it so clearly. You know I'm an art lover. Fucking mwah, chef's kiss.
Why are you not curating that museum?
In my mind, it is being curated. I can see it. And now you know what's really lovely? Anytime I need to escape somewhere, I'm going to go to this museum in my mind that I've got of this iconic pairing.
God, I think I need a roll of this conversation.
Oh, calm down. All right. So, you know, we get through the, I don't know, what do you call it? The intros, the necessities, welcome to this, the cha-cha, the hello, the everybody's welcome, the pleasantries, you know, and right off the bat, we start with the first Erica Jane of it all. Andy is straight in like Flynn. Obviously, Erica's the last person he introduces. And what did you think of Erica? Because you said this at the beginning. This is the first time post the show that Erica is actually getting an opportunity to say what she's been thinking, what she's been feeling over the last 20 weeks or whatever. And her... I shouldn't say attempt, but her display, her showing of some compassion, and was it an acknowledgement that she fully understands, I don't know, why people might think that she didn't play well this season?
I think that Erica has the benefit of hindsight at this point. She's got to see the season play out. She's got to, you know, all of it was happening in real time as well. So her reactions were more or less, you know, authentic, let's say. Like, you know, although she was trying to push a specific narrative about her marriage in particular, but I think she has clearly engaged with the lawyers on this one. I mean, there's a lot more of the alleged and allegedly coming up now, which I think has been a learning point for her after filming. I think that she has also probably engaged a crisis PR person, perhaps at PK's suggestion. She's taken that on board. So I just felt like her attitude towards the reunion, I think she knows what to say, what not to say, how to play it. And, you know, it's she's in control now because, you know, when you're filming, it's live. Like you can't just stop or think or whatever. Yeah. This time it's question and answer. She can sit there and think about how she wants to phrase the answers. And I think we've already seen it in the trailer where she starts to fumble a little bit over her words. And I think that's her, you know, trying to make sure that she's not incriminating, but just not giving lawyers a reason to subpoena her or to subpoena the tapes or whatever it is, right? Because I think that's her issue at the moment, is that the lawyers will come after the Bravo tapes, and anything that she said on camera that didn't make it into the show, like, is going to be fair game. And who knows what she was saying that she's asked to be removed for legal reasons.
One of the things that you said there that really struck me, because I wasn't able to articulate it, is you said her attitude. And I think that's exactly what it is. She gave us a specific type at the beginning of the show anyway. I don't necessarily think by the end of the show she still has the same attitude. At the end of this part one, she has the same attitude. But at the beginning, she did try to come off softer and gave us this new attitude. For me, though, it's really hard for me to accept that attitude as genuine, because in real time on the internet, on Twitter and on her Instagram, but mainly on Twitter, she's giving us a completely different attitude. She's giving us that lack of compassion. And so to me, it's like, I know people can have multitudes, but it doesn't add up to me that you now want to have this sort of speech just because, you know, the cameras are rolling. You could have walked in that attitude online on social media where you have been very active, because then when you brought it to the show, it all would have come together and it would feel more genuine. It would feel more authentic. To me, it's just like she's playing TV.
Yeah, but I guess at the end of the day, her lawyers or like the opposing side's lawyers aren't going to be sitting there, you know, trying to marry up her Twitter personality with her on camera personality. I think they're just.
You don't think so?
No, well, I don't think they can. I think they just have to take everything at face value, and they're just going to have to take, you know, like what she says on Twitter and what she says on camera and use it, the facts.
The facts. I mean, the law, you can only deal with the facts. But if you do not think that there are paralegals out there who are looking at these two juxtapositions in a way to twist the facts, these are people who are going to get their promotions, mate, off this Erica Jayne drama.
Well, you know, she's told us that there are things she can say, there's things that she cannot say. She said that her lawyers told her to quit. I mean, the fact that she stayed on is clearly because of the money. Like, you know, I think had she quit so early on in the season, she wouldn't have had any money. And that's obviously been a huge point of, you know, contention for her, that she was losing out on Mr. Girardi's cash flow.
Well, it's the money, and also because she wanted to push a specific narrative, which I think by the end of this part one, we start to see Andy come in with those questions, right? So she, and I guess the other side of it is that for me, from my perspective anyway, her narrative backfired on her on the show. I just think she didn't play it well. I don't know who gave her the idea to play it the way she's played it. It just...
But that's the thing.
I want to shake her, Patrizio. It's so frustrating.
No one gave her the idea to play like that, and that's the problem. Like, she didn't have the right advice going into it, and that's why her lawyers told her to quit. It was because
they couldn't handle it.
I've got this. I'm gonna like tell my story. I'm gonna tell her how like it needs to be told. And her lawyers were like, "This isn't gonna end well." And Erica's like, "No. I got this." And like, it didn't end well.
I thought it was really interesting then that we learn which other ladies have, you know, gotten the law involved. So, you know, from Kyle getting one of Faye Resnick's husband to explain the LA Times article, you know, Sutton, obviously we know Sutton got the lawyers in. She didn't get her lawyers. She just got a lawyer that she happened to know to kind of talk to her. So I guess you're saying it wasn't real legal advice. And then Crystal, of course, just being like, you know, if you're smart and rich, you get your lawyers involved, because she signed on to do a television show for the first time in her life, and you want to know what you own and what you don't own. So I thought that was nice perspective.
Well, and this was the problem in the show, that Sutton kind of got like dragged for talking to the lawyers because, you know, of her reputation. Mm-hmm. And it was like, because Sutton didn't want to be subpoenaed, like none of them do. And that's why Crystal engaged with some lawyers as well. And they've obviously had the conversation around what you should be saying and how you should be engaging with Erica and all the rest of it. And I'm sure all these lawyers also were like, why is this woman even on the show? Like, they were probably all incredulous at that fact. Like,
oh, not incredulous. Do we think that Dumb and Dumber, which is what I'll be referring to them as, it's up to you which one is dumb and which one is dumber, out of Dorit and Rinna, do you think that they engage in lawyers but are still too, and do you think also Kyle engaged deeper with a lawyer but they're still too chicken shit to say?
No, Dorit, well, I mean, Dorit said that she did talk to a lawyer. Didn't she talk to Boy George and PK and somebody else? I don't know. Like, I don't really know what Dorit's
up to. That's Dorit's legal team right there. Boy George. I want Boy George as my lawyer. Like, legit. I love Boy George.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure all of them have spoken to a lawyer at some point about this. You know what? They all don't want to be dragged into the mess. They don't want to be 100%. Sued. They don't want to, like, you know, they just, you have to check your bag. And the only person that perhaps didn't is Rinna. Like,
do you really think she didn't?
I don't know what she did. I think that she, you know, I think she believes that Erica knows what she's doing and will support her blindly through this.
I believe that, you know what I believe, like, will happen with Rinna? Like, it'll come out that she liaised with a lawyer, but it'll be, I didn't reach out to the lawyer. My lawyer reached out to me when he saw what was happening. Do you know? It's that sort of thing. But, I mean, you would have reached out to your lawyer.
I don't have a lawyer. Like, I think that's a very American thing, to have a lawyer.
On retainer. One day we'll get there and we'll just have lawyers on retainer. All right. So let's move on. This sort of, we kick off with a little bit of Erica, but yeah, do you ever like know how they're going to start? Like, were you surprised that in this first section, we started with Sutton and Garcelle?
I was kind of surprised by this whole episode, really. I think like getting into Erica straight away, I was a bit like, oh, like we're doing this, are we? Like, I guess it made sense. Because it's kind of like, you know, signposting, I guess, like, you know, Erica, how much is able to participate in this reunion moving forward. But, I mean, look, Sutton and Garcelle, like, I think we have to remember that Sutton is, like, the new girl, technically. Like, she just got her diamond. So this is her first season as a full-time housewife. So to have her straight up made sense. Perhaps having Crystal next would have been, like, you know, that more traditional, like, here was your first season in review.
That's what I thought.
We kind of got into Garcelle instead. And then I thought, I mean, jumping ahead just a tiny little bit, but please, in that, you know, surprise, Kathy Hilton got brought out very early on.
100%. Couldn't agree with you more. Do we think she'll stay, though?
Oh, she's there for the whole four parts, I think.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't just have her there from the beginning. Like,
well, I guess they can't because she's technically not a diamond holder.
Well, if you're going to model the set off the woman's house.
Thank you.
And you're going to roll her out within the first, like, it was within the first 30 minutes. Like, I was like, when they rolled out Kathy Hilton, and I say rolled out, like they put her in a wheelchair and they like rolled her out. when they rolled her out, I was like, oh, we must be in like the last 5 minutes. Cause you know how like they always do that shit. It's like, here's the friend of next week on the reunion. Like, but I was like, oh no, she is like here for a little bit.
Yeah. I am 100% with you. I'm really surprised that Sutton didn't naturally roll into a discussion about Crystal, given that they had such a complex relationship at the start of the season. Like, before we forget, like, when they were in Tahoe and everything was happening, before we found out about Erica and Tom, the main storyline was this Crystal versus Crystal and Sutton tension, right? So I was really surprised that we didn't kick off with that. I'm sure these editors know what they're doing and it'll come. But let's talk a little bit about the Sutton retrospective. So, you know, we kicked off with Sutton first. We did a little bit of a look back at Sutton's sensitivity. I mean, what were your takeaways from that? Were there any things on in there that you had kind of forgotten? Was it a nice kind of montage of Sutton's journey this season?
I mean, yeah, we kind of forget that she had all these sensitivities before she got pulled into the Erica drama, right?
Yes.
We forget that she had all this like drama with Crystal. Like, you know what? I don't know. Would Sutton have been a full-time housewife without the Erica drama? I don't know.
Look, there's a lot of storylines that we could talk about here that are, like, legit and that are bullshit. And there's a lot of people who, when we get into Garcelle, the weeds of it all, and we talk about Dumb and Dumber, I mean, without Garcelle, would they have even had a reason to be at the reunion?
I mean, actually, plenty of people are calling for the resignations.
We'll get to it, but I want to talk about Suddy because we are sluts for Sutton. We are Suddy buddy buddies. Suddy buddy buddies.
Say that seven times. Suddy buddy butthole buddies.
Yeah, Suddy buddy butthole buddy. We should get that merch made. But I thought it was really. I don't, as you know, I don't often watch What Happens Live and all that other stuff. Mm. So I hadn't seen that hit that Rinna sent her that said that essentially Sutton doesn't have a business or a career or a job. But it was great to hear that Sutton's store / her business has been doing all right since the pandemic.
It's only gotten better, apparently, which I was surprised to hear.
But she has a very sophisticated business model. Like, she curates really specific items, and she probably makes sure that no other store has them. So the idea is that, like, if you want that very specific dress or that bag, you can only buy it from Sutton. Like, it makes sense that the store's done well. Everything also costs $6 zillion in that store.
Well, I was gonna say, it's also like, I feel like rich ladies in the pandemic have not stopped their purchasing. Like, they are still buying the bags, the gowns, the jewelry, even though they've got nowhere to go.
But aren't we all? I mean, we are living in, we here in the lower level in Melbourne, in Victoria, our postal service has like had days where they're like, guys, you're not getting your deliveries for 3 months because everybody is shopping too much. I am currently waiting on 4 deliveries that were meant to be delivered like 3 weeks ago, still haven't arrived, and that still hasn't stopped me from online shopping. So yeah, I guess it's all relative, right? They're just shopping for the more expensive things.
But yeah, it was a rough dig. I mean, how is a store not a business? You know, what does that even mean? What's the implication there? I mean, you want to talk about Sutton not having a business? Let's talk about Rinna not having a storyline. Like,
thank you. I think the implication there that she was saying is that, like, Sutton has a hobby. It's like something to tie her over. But it's like, that's not lifting women up. Like, Rinna is trash.
But you know what? Even if it is a hobby, like, she is making the money. She actually doesn't probably need to have the store. I think she wants to have the store. It's personal enjoyment for her to have it. Like, she doesn't rely on the income, I'm sure, because she's getting plenty of cash buying her Bentley, her $5 million home, and all the rest of it out of her divorce settlement. Like, I'm sure she doesn't need the shop or the business.
Yeah, I also think Rinna's whole thing is that because she considers herself to be this hustler, like, for her, it's like anybody who she doesn't see on, you know, the Home Chef shopping network, you know, hustling the way she does. I mean, she had a store back in the day before she was selling her duster coats, and that store went bankrupt. Like, she forgets that everybody has to start somewhere. And it was just like, you know what, it's just hateration. That's what I call that.
I
was gonna say
Rinna versus the other couch is really reunion
is really what it is. I think for me the best revelation was learning about Sutton potentially burning down Kyle's Bel Air home that she was renting and not even knowing that she did.
It's because she didn't know to open the flue.
You know, fireplaces.
Yeah, because, like, obviously, like, it's shut off because you don't have it open all the time. Obviously, like, Sutton has lit a fire. The smoke can't go up the chimney, so it's come out instead.
Jesus.
And I'm sure somebody worked it out at some point when, like, the room was filling up with, like, black soot.
But she didn't even see that damage, which is wild to me. It makes me think that she wasn't there when it happened. It was, like, her kids or something.
Oh, who knows? But, like, I'm just glad to hear that she's finally in her home.
Yes. But how do you feel as well about Kyle bringing things to the reunion after the fact, knowing that the women don't know, and then kind of putting them on the spot? She did it with Garcelle and the charity funds. And now in a more lighthearted way, obviously, she's done it again with Sutton and the fireplace. Like, that picture was ready to go. She had told Andy that she was going to do this. Why would she put Sutton on the spot like that and not just tell her beforehand? I mean, to me, it speaks to the fact that Kyle, again, has no storyline either this season and, you know, needs something to make herself relevant on the couch because otherwise she's got nothing to say.
But this is the whole thing with Kyle Richards. She doesn't have a storyline. She doesn't have anything going on. She's just the girl that, like, produces. She's, like, self-producing and she's starting the drama. When everything is, like, done and dusted, she brings it up again for the TV. Like, this is just her MO at this point. Like, are we surprised? No. Who she is.
It's who she is. Now, how did you feel to learn that Sutton is now single, that her boyfriend Michael broke up with her on Valentine's Day week, like the weekend?
As somebody who has been broken up with on Valentine's Day.
Oh, rude. Who did that to you? I would cut them.
I mean, that's a whole other podcast, Marshy. But you know what? I say she's just moved into her lovely new home. She's got her brand new Bentley. Like, Shin, get rid of the man. He was clearly a rebound. Like, we don't need him. Like, let's just have new things.
And now she's dating. And that caused Erica Jane to pipe in with, dating who? Because apparently Erica wants hot sex and she also wants to be dating. So I want to know, where do people like Sutton go to date? Because they're not on like Bumble, or are they?
Well, wasn't Garcelle like on Bumble or something?
She was on Bumble. She got a matchmaker to put on Bumble. But look, I love Garcelle, but Sutton is richer than Garcelle. Where did Janet Roach go to meet her millionaire? Like,
where does the singer like ever meet all her men? Like, I think Florida. Sutton would have no trouble finding men. And I think for me, when you bring up this whole Erica thing, where Erica was like shocked to hear that Sutton is like dating, it's like people want to date Sutton. Like, Sutton is, you know, but no, like, I love this. Sutton,
don't apologize.
Sutton is a, you know, very kind person. She's got a good heart. She's family oriented. She's, you know, she's independent in the way that she's got her business and she's got cash coming in. I think she's one to be out socializing and meeting men and going on dates and having fun. Erica Jane is toxic at this point. Like, who's going to want to date that?
And do you think there is this perception with Erica that she will only date for money?
Well, if it's for money or for dick, like, you know, it's one or the other. I think that Erica was just like almost, you know, upset to hear that Sutton's doing so well. Like, it's one of those moments.
That was actually the vibe that I got, that she was upset to hear that Sutton was living her best life. I think one of the other interesting things that throughout sort of Sutton's story, whenever they would mention something about, like, when Sutton sort of talked about how happy she is and they cut to Erica, you know, they cut to Erica, the way Erica is sitting on that chair, like, up against the side, she's keeping space between everybody else and she's looking ahead, like she's almost refusing to look at Sutton, but she wants to pipe in and make comments. And it just, again, like, I feel like that is truly who Erica is, and that is her, that attitude that she's giving us is truly who she is, and it just doesn't marry up with the way she tried to portray herself at the beginning of the episode. So, yes, there was definitely some jealousy going on there.
I just want to say, but this is how you get your revenge. This is the best type of revenge.
Yeah.
When you do so success. Well. Success.
We must remember that for ourselves. The best type of revenge is success. Now, speaking of single ladies and dating, Garcelle has said that her boys now, you know, they would be open to her bringing a new man into her life. I want to see Garcelle with someone. I don't know why. I just wanted to have, like, I want her to have a similar success and to rub it in their faces.
I thought you were going to say, I really want to see Garcelle with Brad Pitt.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You can read my innermost thoughts. So you know that that's what I was saying without articulating and actually saying those words. That's what I was saying. I don't want her, like, dating Brad Pitt. I kind of want them to have a fling. She can definitely do better than Brad Pitt.
I mean, yeah, look, she's got a next season to work on her dating. I'm sure that'll be her thing.
You know what it is? It's like Garcelle didn't have a chance because she got married when she did. She didn't have a chance in the 90s to have her fling with Brad Pitt. So, like, no, she didn't. So, like, she needs to have that opportunity to have that fling with the heartthrobs of her era. And then she needs to find herself somebody new. And that's, like, her person.
But why not have a fling with a heartthrob of this era? Like, get her with a Hemsworth or something.
Disgusting. They don't even wash. She needs to be with somebody who washes every day, you know.
Or get her with, like, a Muhammad Hadid.
He's, like, bankrupt. He's, like, ruined all of his wives' lives. Patricia, you are not allowed to play matchmaker.
Yeah, look, I'm definitely not qualified.
Definitely not. But let's talk about the shift into the Garcelle narrative. And in this part, I guess, Garcelle's the dumb and dumber of it all. The people who throughout the entire season had the least to say finally had the most to say. I found both Rinna and Dorit incredibly aggressive through this section. The way they spoke to Dorit, they would not speak to any other woman on the show that way. If you want to talk about being passively provocative, whatever the fuck that means, Dorit, I think those two are passively provocative. I also just think they're absolute twits. I have no time for them. They showed me who they were. What are your overall thoughts about the Garcelle, what was meant to be Garcelle's moment that turned into Dumb and Dumber going off at her moment?
I mean, look, this is the ladies trying to save themselves and get a contract for next season.
Mm-hmm. At the expense of a black woman. I'm going to say it. I hate them.
I mean, it has to be said. I think perhaps what has annoyed them the most is Garcelle is now the fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think, yeah, look, it wasn't great. It was quite disgusting to watch. I mean, Dorito screaming at Garcelle.
Feral.
Like, and the way that everyone just sits there and, like, doesn't call her out on it, you know, I think their eyes said it all. But, like, it's just not okay. And, like, as even if Garcelle has been provocative this season, has jabbed them, has sent darts, whatever it is, like, Dorito just took it to another level. Like,
mm-hmm.
And
I, sorry.
No, just it was disappointing.
It was disappointing. And for me, it's like, I think they had some relatively valid points. Well, I think Rinna had some relatively valid points about her relationship with Garcelle. I do think that, like, Garcelle didn't do a great job of articulating what it is about Rinna that is bugging her so much. She did bring up this situation that had happened off camera where somebody had basically said that Rinna had been racist, because, you know, insinuate that is what Rinna called it, but essentially that Rinna had said some stuff offline that Garcelle didn't have to bring race into it. It wasn't about that. And I think that it is a valid argument to sort of call out that Garcelle has been avoidant with Rinna, that she has had put higher expectations on Rinna, that she hasn't really given Rinna a chance. Like, I actually am down with all of that. And I think Garcelle bringing up this offline conversation, but then not saying who said it. You know, I don't like that sort of stuff. I'm like, if you're going to do that and you're going to bring it to the show, you've got to bring it into the show. But it's the way that the two of them come together, like Dorit and Rinna, to kind of have this, just the way they speak to Garcelle and the way they articulate what their issues, it completely cancels out any of the points that they're trying to make and just totally invalidates anything that they say that is valid. Like, I just can't even hear what they're trying to say because they just look like idiots.
Well, yeah, I think Garcelle and Rinna could perhaps learn from Karen Huger and Giselle. Like,
mm-hmm. I thought of that as well.
You can be enemies on these shows. Like, you don't have to be friends. You're allowed to fall out and have these, like, you know, fun, jabby relationships at each other where you go to the same events and you can, you know, be in the same space but just not be friends like you once were. And I think that's the other thing. I don't think Garcelle and Rinna were ever, like, friends like that. I think...
Exactly.
And Garcelle, I don't think she has to explain why she doesn't like Rinna. I think, like, I hate plenty of people and I have no reason for it. Like, sometimes it's just the vibe that people put out that you're just like, I'm just not into you. Like, I don't want anything to do with you. Like, I can't tell you what it is about you, but I just don't like you.
And the thing is that That's exactly it. It didn't have to be a huge deal, but Rinna made it a bigger deal than it was, again, because she needed to have some sort of storyline. And on the Dorit side, Dorit was, like, bringing things into the conversation that she wasn't even there for. Garcelle was making a really valid point that you're talking about a dinner that you were not even in attendance for. You don't know what I said about Sutton. And the clip we see shows that Garcelle does defend Sutton in that space. For me, also, what was really disappointing was Crystal jumping on the darts / jabs train when, I don't know, but the types of darts / jabs that Crystal is talking about are the exact same darts / jabs that she was giving to everybody at the start of the season when she was being so cold and so rude. And all of these women shade each other in the confessionals. That's literally all they do in the confessionals is say the shit that they behind each other's backs that they will never say to each other's faces. I think another aspect for it that I really didn't like is then Dorit and Rinna started to go down this train that obviously Garcelle is not okay. You know, that's why she's being so nasty, because she must be really, like, hurting. And I think this is the issue that I had as well with that, you know, I'm doing an air quotes, that vulnerable moment from Garcelle, is that these women can't be happy unless Garcelle is suffering. Like, I don't understand why you need to see a Black woman's pain to be able to like her. And I, when Dorit said that Garcelle appeared to have checked out, I'm sorry, that was a reach.
Everything that Dorito said was a reach.
A reach. And I loved it when Garcelle said, check out, I showed up. And then just to chime in again on more fragility, Erica Jane then responded with, so did I. And it's like, Erica, just because somebody did something doesn't mean that you didn't. Like, talk about feeling threatened and feeling fragile. Go back into your little box. This is Garcelle's moment.
I mean, Erica, I felt, kept, like, through the whole thing, kept, like, cutting in.
Yes.
It's just like, no one's talking to you. Be quiet.
Be quiet. Like, you can't suddenly want to have opinions when you just wanted to sit in your corner just before. For me, once it hit that point, that reach, that level of reach, to me, if Dorit is back next season, she needs to be back as a friend of, because I don't know what she's bringing to the table.
And the worst part is she's not going to be a friend of, she's going to be a full-time housewife.
It's bullshit. She's just clutching at straws. You know what? Next season, she better be driving her car. It better fall off a cliff. She better have a concussion. And then she better have ankle surgery. Because if I am not getting that level of drama from her next season that is legit, she needs to be off.
And I just, on the back of that, want to say, and then if Lisa Rinna goes to see Dorit in the hospital, when she goes home, her car rolls 5 times it in the better. Snow in Bel Air, Beverly Hills.
That one day that it snowed.
I think the biggest problem with Dorito is that she's inconsistent, and Garcelle calls it out as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's this whole thing of, like, she wants Garcelle to, you know, say it to their faces. She wants them to be, her to be direct and real and all the rest of it. And Garcelle's like, but I am. And then Dorit's like, but no, you do it behind our backs, like in the confessionals, and we never get, like, any of these opinions to our faces. And Garcelle's like, but I do. Like, it's like, just because you don't like how it's being delivered doesn't mean that she's not doing it.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, the issue that they have is that they just don't like Garcelle's personality. And on the upside of that, Garcelle doesn't give a fuck. And I think that also annoys them, is the fact that Garcelle just doesn't care. The fact that she doesn't give them any attention, I think, is also something that pisses them off.
But that's, like, again, if, you know, if success is the best revenge, like, paying the bitches no mind is, yes, like, also just as, like, it hurts, because you're like, this, like, You know what? It's like never, like, this is just some life advice at this point. Like, never block anyone because, like, that shows you actually had to put in the effort to go and block them. Like, you know what I mean? You just leave it. Like, don't unfriend, don't, like, block. Just leave them because that just shows how little you care. You're putting in no effort. And that's what Garcelle's doing. She's giving them nothing. And that bothers them so much because Garcelle was unfollowing them on Instagrams or blocking them, whatever. Then at least she's engaging. But Garcelle's like, I'm not even engaged.
Patricio, you just gave our listeners, me, everyone, some pertinent life advice. You know, that was amazing. Amen, brother.
I mean, it had to be said.
It did have to be said, and I appreciate you saying it. The other thing that I really kind of loved about towards this end, so obviously, you know, Rinna gets up and does the coming over for the drama, and there's the fake, you know, friendship pact that they make, that the drama is all under the bridge and whatever. Actually, no, my question for you is, after the end of this package, number one, do you think Garcelle likes Dorit?
As I just said, I think she has no feelings either way about Dorit. Okay. And that's going to bother Dorit more than anything.
Okay, then what about Rinna?
I really, really was uncomfortable by how Rinna, like, ran over to Garcelle.
Yep.
And, like, forced Garcelle to, like, you know, repair the friendship or whatever it is. And I think this is, like, Rinna's done this now a few times. I feel like this is, she's gone from, like, owning it and, like, you know, holding grudges and all the rest of it to now just trying to, like, wrap things up, like, as quickly as possible. And I'm just not into it. I didn't believe it. It didn't feel, like, authentic. I felt like Garcelle was pushed into that. I think she was really uncomfortable. Like, lady, it's a pandemic. Stay on your side.
Thank you. Now, the other side is, I know we've been talking about, we don't have it confirmed yet whether Garcelle is back next season. So one of the things I was thinking is that if Garcelle doesn't come back next season, I mean, we would all be heartbroken, but it would also potentially mean that, like, Dorit can't come back next season, or Lisa can't come back next season, because that's, to me, it's like a power move. She doesn't come back because that's all they had, was to have these little grudges with Garcelle. And I suppose they're hoping that next season they get to kind of do the rebuild friendship storyline. But if Garcelle's not there, it's a power move.
I think it's a greater power move to bring in, like, two of Garcelle's friends.
Best friends. Thank you. Make it happen, brother. Let's put that into the ether. Let's put that into the universe.
Because then Garcelle won't even have a need to make up with these women.
Exactly.
Like, move the power balance onto, I mean, we've been saying it for, like, weeks now. Like, Garcelle is not another future of the show. And, like, let's move the power balance into their favor.
100%. So the other tension that I want to talk out came out while this Rinna Garcelle situation that was very uncomfortable was going on. Of course, Dorit, the fucking idiot, has to say, gosh, I hate that I said fucking idiot, but she really angered me in the way that she screamed at Garcelle in this season, in this episode. But her having to kind of dig a little bit and say, you know, talk about being passively provocative, saying, but do you mean it, to Garcelle? Like, that is a dart. That is a jab. To which Erica Jayne says, don't push it, which is actually what we were all thinking. Like, Erica Jayne is actually speaking the truth here. Dorit then says, I'm not talking to you right now. And EJ tells her to shut up. And I was like, fight, Jerry. I wanted that at that moment. I wanted the two of them to go at it.
Yeah, interesting, right? Because, like, in this whole, like, Garcelle thing, it's clearly, like, the trio against Garcelle.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was weird to then watch Dorit and, like, Erica, like, because clearly, I mean, and it's interesting that Dorit has the issue with Erica, like, because you would have thought it was the other way around.
Well, that's what I was thinking. But I guess, you know what it was? That was actually, I think we can call that an authentic moment, because Dorit, it was like, it was really not planned. I think if Dorit could do it again, she wouldn't have said either whatever she said to Garcelle, or she wouldn't have said, I'm not talking to you right now, because because there's obviously, that's a tension that she's not produced. That's a tension that she doesn't want to talk about. She wants to have this thing with Garcelle instead. But I was like, there's the real dirt. The thing that I want to see from Erica is I want her to go off at these women, because now that she has seen truly that it wasn't all Sutton, that it wasn't all Garcelle, that these other bitches have been stoking the fire, starting so many of these conversations behind her back, especially Miss Kyle. I am ready for that conversation.
I know. And I mean, I think I've said it before, like, Erica should have at least respected Sutton that she was bringing it up to her face.
Thank you.
And asking the questions, because these women who she thought were her friends were all talking shit, and like rightly so, but yeah, anyway, I just
thought the thing is that they were just denying that they were ever talking shit about her, and they were.
I just want to close this section out by saying, you know, watching Dorit scream, shout, like really talk to Garcelle down like a child, as the great Gina Liano would say, raise your argument, not your voice.
Raise your argument, not your voice. Pay these bitches no mind. Patricio, preach, bruh. Preach.
Honey.
Well, the respite that we needed came in the form of Kathy Hilton entering the chat with her receipts.
God. What do you think are on her receipts?
Hunky dory. I don't know. I don't think it's anything to do with beef. I think it's more just her explaining things about herself.
But that was like the thing that I couldn't understand, because I was kind of like, she didn't have any drama. I feel like she wasn't involved in any drama. So she doesn't need like to clarify anything, I don't think. So I was just sort of like, yeah, why do you need to bring receipts to a reunion if like, there's really nothing to like talk about with you?
No, I think I think her receipts are about herself. Like, I think it's just her clarifying aspects of her personality. But either way, I'm intrigued. And the thing that I love is like, Monique bought on Potomac the binder, but Kathy just, in true Kathy form, just scrunched up piece of notepad that she probably wrote while she was in the dressing room or the green room putting her face on, you know what I mean? But I guess, you know, the first question everybody wants to know is, does she recognize the set?
Well, it doesn't look like her house, so I don't exactly know why she would have to.
That was kind of weird. It took her a while, but then, you know, she got the clues, the context clues, and she was like, oh, it's my house. For the listeners out there, I gave like a woozy face, like Kathy Hilton is like, this is not my house, bitch. But it was nice as well to see that cute little montage of the Kathy Hilton appearances over the years. I had totally forgotten that magic one with Adrian. Oh, you do magic now. I don't know why it threw me. I think it was funnier because now we know her a little bit more.
It was so good.
It was fabulous.
But yeah, I totally like didn't realize like how often she had been like a guest on the show.
Yes. And I also think as well, her hair had changed a lot. I don't know if her face had.
Oh, look, I'm sure that she's had a few touch-ups here and there. But, yeah, she does. Yeah. She's sporting, definitely. I think she's, like, slimmed down a little. Her hair's a little bit more, it's a bit different now.
A bit different. She looks the best that she's ever looked after looking at those montages. I was like, she looks, I mean, most of them do. She looked fabulous. Now, the Halloween prank that she supposedly played on Kyle, and that was really promotion for Kyle's appearance in the new Halloween movie, that was bullshit and so dumb.
It was very confusing, and like Kathy Hilton's just nodding because she has no idea what's going on.
What is going on? Yeah, 100%. I do not believe that was her prank. But again, you know, Kyle, good on you as executive producer for doing a little cross promotion there of your return to the screen. And also, we touched on Kyle's nose job, but again, another tip to take away: your ears and your nose are going to grow until you die. So, you know, you want to make sure that they're constantly looking their best.
Did you not know that, Moshi?
I knew about ears, but I don't think I realized about noses.
Yeah, it's a sad reality. And then also, I feel like on top of that, like, the hair in those places also grows. Like,
that's a reality that only you have to deal with in this conversation.
No, we all get it, all right? I will have it worse than everyone else.
But I guess we didn't get a lot from Kathy. It was more just a little sort of an intro section before we did an about face and returned back to what I'm calling part two of the Erica Jane of it all. I think if they're going to break up the Erica Jane mess into parts and pieces, I love it. Give us little bite-sized pieces so that then we can, you know, have a bit of respite and then come back and attack her again. So Andy calling out the red flags from reunions past. So the Tom not reading the book, Tom not seeing her play on Chicago, and her sort of talking to why she went into defensive mode back then. What were your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are I probably wouldn't read my partner's, like, autobiography either. Like,
Would you not do the audiobook?
No, I don't do audiobooks. It's just sort of like, just give me the pages where you're talking shit about me. Like, that's all I really would want to read. And I don't know, like...
To me, those red flags that Andy called out didn't really speak to me to do with anything specific that was happening in a breakdown of their marriage at that point in time. To me, it kind of spoke to the fact that perhaps their marriage had always been transactional, or at least the latter part of it. Once she joined Housewives, it became a transactional relationship. So those things didn't call out to me as red flags when I first saw them. To me, they called out that was just part of the agreement.
Moshi, Erica Jane is no Michelle Obama. Like who's reading this autobiography?
I'm just gonna say, no one is Michelle Obama.
I know, but like, you know what I mean. Like, in the grand scheme of things, of like, you know, what's it like interesting life stories to read? Erica Jane is not in my top 100 of like lives that I care about.
But I guess what I'm sort of alluding to is that Andy was bringing these up to use them as points to kind of show that their marriage was breaking down. And what I'm sort of saying is that I don't think in the context of their 20-year marriage that there had ever been like a cause for Tom to go deep, like to go and maybe see her on Chicago just for aesthetics or whatever. But like, when we first found out that Tom didn't read her book, like you said, obviously she knew Michelle Obama, but I would expect Mauricio to read Kyle's book because their relationship seems very loving. They genuinely love each other. They've built this world together. And to me, it has nothing to do with like just the age difference between Tom and Erica. It just seems to me that they both, and I actually have no issues with it, they both went into their marriage wanting very specific things. And part of the agreement wasn't ever that I have to like be your cheerleader and show up for you. So to me, I don't think that those situations were aspects of their marriage breaking down. And I think in hindsight, as you've said, Erica is now using those as opportunities to show that her marriage was breaking down. I think even if she had done Chicago 15 years ago, Tom wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, I guess like Tom is from a different generation as well. Like he's 80 years old, and you know, I think to him, a relationship is where like Erica would have been the beautiful woman on his arm at like these dinners with, you know, high flying attorneys. Like,
yeah, it's all about appearances for both of them.
And I don't think that he wouldn't have been supportive of her writing the book, but I just don't think that he would have had seen a need to read it or whatever. Like, yeah.
Thank you.
I think you're right. I think, like, we're just kind of, like, not clutching at straws here, but we're trying to make something out that it's not.
Exactly. We're trying to make something a bigger thing than it was. Which is, it is sad in and of its own right, but at the same time, you know, I think everything about this relationship between the two of them is incredibly calculated on both of their parts.
And, like, the whole, like, Tom not going to New York to watch Chicago, like, I don't know. Like, he was going to go. It didn't end up happening.
Yes.
Like, Omate's got work to do. Like, he can't be out to, like, watch every Chicago.
Scams,
like,
to do, as we've since learned.
Well, to allegedly. Work. Allegedly. Yeah, I don't know. Like, whatever. I think, like, next.
Okay, so next for me is the way... So you mentioned attitude when you were talking about Erica at the beginning, and I sort of said Erica's attitude changes. Because now that she's in this mode where it's like, okay, now is my opportunity to bash Tom, the way she speaks changes. The cadence in her voice changes. She suddenly becomes very Southern. And she starts to speak like what I would call a Black evangelical pastor. She's like, da-da, da-da, da-da. Yes, why did he do that? Like, she starts sort of speaking in this way that I'm like, that's not how a human speaks. What the fuck are you doing? Just listen to her cadence and the way her tone changes. I was like, Erica, please.
I mean, I feel like Erica's whole thing is very put on. And then perhaps, is that her real voice?
I don't think, you know, so I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it once. Maybe I'll say it like seven other times. You never know. Erica does not know who she is. She has lost all sense of herself. And that is a huge reason as to why she is coming. She just is not being authentic. And it's a huge reason why she keeps shifting attitudes and personas and vocal cadences. She does not know who she is. And, you know, if we compare her to, say, Sutton has cultivated a real identity. Erica Jane has lived too much in being Erica Jane and Erica Girardi that she is, like, if you're into, like, the MCU, then you know about, like, the multiverses. She's having, like, a Doctor Strange moment. She does not know who she is anymore. She's, like, caught in this weird thing, and because of it, we are never getting authentic moments from her because she doesn't know who to be. And I just think, you know, she needs some deep, deep therapy. She probably needs to hang out with Denise's husband, and he needs to plug some sockets into her so she can find out who she is.
Well, you know what? Today I was not expecting to hear Denise's husband.
Needs to be plugged some sockets into her. Well, that, all of that aside, we are left with a cliffhanger. The question is us. So we've been advised, obviously, that this weird narrative that Tom cheated on her, which is funny to me. I don't know why. But now Andy is asking, did Erica cheat on Tom? Ta-da! What do you think? What do you think the answer is going to be?
I think the answer is going to be no.
Yes, exactly.
But I would probably think that she has had, like, extramarital adventures. She's just not going to say it on the show because it's not going to bode well for her divorce to be coming out saying that she was cheating on Tom as much as Tom was cheating on her. Like, I mean,
I think they had an arrangement. I think it was like, as long as you don't get caught, do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, I don't know if they had an arrangement. I think it was more Tom did whatever he wanted. And I think Erica figured out at some point that she could probably do the same. I don't know. But, like, yeah, she's not going to come out and say the truth.
No, I agree with you. So that's the end of part one. What do you think? What's happening next? What do you want to happen next? What are you looking forward to? Or, I don't know, all of the things. Are you looking forward to anything? Or
I think I just want to say I'm really looking forward to, like, one of the lights to fall on the couch and kill Serena and Rinala.
Okay, look, I'm mad, but I would never wish death on anyone. Take that okay,
not fast. Death, take but like, fast. Maybe just an injury.
No injuries. Do you know what the sweetest revenge is? You said it already, is success.
I know, but you know what? I'm sorry for trying to will that into the universe.
All right, look, this is definitely where we need to end the episode before, as always, you say something that's going to really offend people. Again, there is nobody else on this earth that I would rather talk The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills Reunion with than you, Pastor P. Pay the bitches, no mind.
Thank you, Moshi. I mean, come back next week because I'm sure I have more nuggets of wisdom to share.
Bye, Patty.
Bye, Mosh. Thank you.